Episode 1. Never did I think I'd end up a city girl. In fact, I'd sworn that I'd never be one. I grew up in a smallish town in north central Massachusetts. Yes, that's a real place. And in a family teeming with members thoroughly fearful of all things urban. Our brief interactions with the city were limited to a Boston Red Sox game each summer. And while these experiences were anticipated with much excitement by both my brother and I, they were instead ones that were completely and overwhelmingly saturated with worry and anxiety for my parents, and this was never lost on me. The city was confusing and dangerous and expensive and horrible, and no one, absolutely no one, could possibly want to live there. My grandmother was right with my parents when it came to this opinion, and she wasn't afraid to voice it either. She lived in our home for the first decade of my life, and she was a heavy, but entirely positive, influence on my upbringing, and she has a strong basis for the stories I'm about to share. My grandmother was all things a grandmother is created to be, relentlessly supportive, with just a smidge of judgmental concern, wise beyond her years, but not too humble to remind you of it, incapable of speaking ill of anyone, unless they really deserved it, and then they were harshly labeled something like a bird brain, and chock full of totally weird and sometimes nonsensical adages. I could exhaust you with a list of every little saying my gram had in her repertoire, but the one that stuck with me the most, and the one that relates to why we're here, is, "Honey, there are a lot of things in this world, but there is no such thing as a coincidence." Now, you can surely consider this in the same grain as everything happens for a reason, but she didn't mean it in the widely accepted way based on karma or ordained by a higher being. She meant this in a very personal, specific, and sometimes horribly ordinary way. For example, while searching for maple syrup in the grocery store, you'd find yourself in the wrong aisle completely. But right there in front of you was the marshmallow fluff that you forgot you even needed. Perfect! Helpful? Sure. But hardly extraordinary. Nonetheless, since as a child I considered my grandmother's word as lore, if I found myself somewhere, with someone, and something happened, you better believe I was keeping an eye out for any and all significance. I was on the hunt for happenstance. Oh, and speaking of hunts, or maybe we should say haunts. Everywhere I was looking for happenstance, I seemed to always find something a little beyond. Yeah, ghosts, paranormal experiences, otherwise inexplicable things that common sense could not simply explain away. When I showed up somewhere, something strange and unusual seemed more likely to happen. It wasn't everywhere and every time, but it did get to the point where friends of mine fell into two categories. Those who accepted this to be the case and were along for the ride, whatever it may bring. And those who were decidedly not along for the ride, literally. And they stopped going places if I was going to be there. Thankfully, most fell into the former category, or I would have been even more doomed from the start. But you can see how these things combine to make for an interesting childhood, and also for a kiddo who thought every place was special or had a story to tell. And I didn't really grow out of that. So, when at 38 years old, I found myself unexpectedly forced from the safety and comfort of the cozy suburban home I had known for 13 years, it meant that the place I would wind up had to be meaningful, right? But that place was Boston. The city. That confusing and dangerous and expensive and horrible place where no one, absolutely no one, could possibly want to live. But obviously lots of people do want to live there. Just shy of an estimated 700,000 people choose, presumably, to make Beantown their home. And one of those 700,000 just so happened to be my boyfriend. And so just like that, I was a Bostonian. Granted, a hesitant and partially fearful one, but a Bostonian all the same. When I told my grandmother about my upcoming move, she didn't have a lot to say. And as you may have already gathered, this wasn't exactly like her. When pressed on how she felt about me living in Boston, she was uncharacteristically wishy-washy, This was infuriating to me. I was prepared for her to try to dissuade me. I was prepared for her to even heckle me about it. I was not prepared for her to have no response, or at least not one she was willing to share. Eventually, she admitted that she sort of always knew I'd wind up there at some point, if even for a little while. Big cities, she said, always had a way of drawing together interesting folks, and that was one of the main reasons she avoided them as much as possible. She was far more confident that I would be just fine there and settle in. And even more impressively, she went so far as to promise she'd visit me there too. Provided someone else did the driving, of course. There was no way she was going to navigate the streets with all the crazies, or worse, take public transportation. Classic Graham. Like many others residing within the Commonwealth's capital, my new home was within a historic brick building. And like many other historic brick buildings in Boston, mine was built in the late 1800s during America's Second Industrial Revolution. And just as with its counterparts, the bricks were laid in the hopes of forming the foundation of a thriving and enduring business for the years to come. However, one very distinctive difference set this particular building apart from the scores of others built at the same time and for the same purpose in the city. Instead of being built in a fashion suited strictly for efficiency and production, this building was so much more than just brick and mortar. It is a sprawling and impressive five-story creation of brick and mortar, yes, but it also features beautiful exterior arches of locally mined granite. Terracotta heads top the building's edge, and the windows are formed with lovely and distinctive, but functionally impractical, semicircular forms. The crowning feature is an elaborate corner tower, complete with a clock that is fixed at 7 o'clock on one side and 5 o'clock on the other, marking the workers' starting and quitting times. This building was created with care and architectural touches not expected in your run-of-the-mill, well, mill, but with the detail and love given to a place one wanted to admire, enjoy, and heck, if I'm being honest, make their home. And so, to that extent, I could see exactly why, after serving several different industrial purposes over the past century, someone decided to make this building just that, home. It was lovingly restored and divided into unique loft-style condominiums in the early 2000s. No two units are the same, each having a different square footage, layout, feel, and view. And while I might have been a bit uneasy about making Boston my home, I found a small piece of reassurance knowing I'd be inhabiting a place so individual, with so much character, and no doubt at least so much history to explore. This distinct feeling overcame me as I walked through the brick-domed halls carrying the last of my belongings into my boyfriend's condo. I'm not gonna lie, it took me quite a long time to start referring to it as our place or my home. But as I took a deep breath, eager and anxious to open a new chapter in these unfamiliar surroundings, I forced a smile to cover a lurking fear that was settling in just as I was settling in. If this place looked and felt so inviting, and was built with the kind of care and attention typically shown for a personal home, how many people who spent time in this building over the last 100 years just decided to stay? Is this what drew all of the other residents to also choose this location to become their home? And now that I truly thought about it, had moving here even really been my choice? Ugh, who was I kidding? All of it, all of this, was nothing more than happenstance. Apartment 4423. I put down the box that I had been failing to successfully balance between my arms and knees while John attempted to unlock our door using the 1.5 fingers he had managed to free from far too many bags and totes. We were both completely overladen with things we had lugged up from the moving truck on what had to be our 120th trip of the same fashion, but was hopefully the last. Hearing the lock click at last, I looked down at the lousy box, sighed quickly in anticipation of having to lift it back up, and shook my head to clear the hair out of my eyes. Just as my eyes refocused and I started to lift the box, I was met with an unfamiliar face mere feet from mine. I gasped and dropped the box a short distance I had managed to lift it. As it fell, I heard a voice with a touch of a sweet and melodic cork accent pipe. "Oh, hi, I'm Megan. I live just down the hall in 4423. Let me help you with that." Megan Kerrigan was in her late 30s, just tall enough to be striking without being intimidating, and with a ridiculously gorgeous head of perfectly waved auburn hair. At first glance, you'd guess her dark eyes were brown, but upon closer inspection, you'd realize they were actually the deepest possible shade of forest green, almost unnatural. And paired with her disarmingly cute and youthful smile, her face was like that of a charmingly aged sprite. As mentioned, her voice was enchantingly musical, and with an accent I'm, now, smart enough not to even attempt to recreate. Sorry, guys. This girl was adorable, and apparently also helpful, so naturally I was suspicious from the start. She put down a bag she had been carrying, and quickly grabbed a corner of the box, and helped me hoist it up over the threshold and into our place. I found myself feeling instantly anxious, since every inch of the condo was in complete disarray, with boxes of my things precariously balanced on every possible surface and crammed into any available nook. I thanked her for her help, and she graciously waved her hand, wrinkled her freckle-covered nose, and said, "It's like my gran always says, better good manners than good looks." I couldn't tell if she was kidding, so I just smiled and nodded awkwardly, as is my way. John thanked her for her help and offered her a cold drink, which she kindly accepted, and I rushed to clear a few bar stools for the three of us. Realizing I had already failed at my debut of being an inviting hostess in my new home, I tried to make up some ground and asked Megan how long she had lived in the building. She told us she had moved in about 2 years ago after relocating to the area for a new job at a local pharmaceutical startup. Something about this building, she said, just drew her in. She loved the aesthetic and warmth she felt when she first toured the space that was now her home. I asked a bit more about the type of work her company was doing. I had a background in biotechnology, and although I no longer worked directly in the field, I jumped at any chance to chat science. Megan elaborated on some of the specific research she and her team were conducting, recent grant proposals, and an upcoming round of FDA trials, and I hung on every dorky detail fangirl style. I had to restrain myself from asking what kind of blinds they were using, or auger, and what type of microscopes they had. See? I was already out of control. But listening to Megan discuss her work with so much fervor was a refreshing relief, and it was quickly evident that this adorable, helpful neighbor of mine was also clever and bright. It might be hard not to like her after all. She finished her drink and gently put her glass down on our countertop. Turning to me, she started, "Well, I certainly don't want to bore you with more of my work, Gab. I know you've got a lot of unpacking to do." Her eyes wandered around, and I was in no shape to argue with that point, even though deep down I would have happily put off the task in exchange for just about anything, let alone some interesting conversation. "Once you're settled in, though, you'll have to come to my gaff for a girls' night. A few of us in the building have one every month or so." She had opened her mouth, presumably to elaborate further on these gatherings, but instead froze stiff and looked alarmed. Her head tilted and shook ever so slightly as she brought her hand to her open mouth and her eyes focused intently on something over my shoulder. Before I could even ask her if she was all right, the look I had presumed to be sheer terror in her eyes lightened, and she screeched, "Would you look at that? I didn't know you had yourself a kitty." And she rushed past me to go greet the teeny creature she must have now spied in between the chaos strewn about our place. As Megan doted on our sweet, elderly kitty Sophie, I couldn't even attempt to hide my elation as I dumbly asked if she liked cats. She nodded and chuckled in between head bops and nuzzles and explained that she had a cat as well, a stately albino gentleman by the name of Alabaster, who Megan described as her soul kitty. Crap, there was no getting around it. I was just going to have to be friends with this chick. After sufficiently smothering Sophie with greetings and affection, Megan picked her story back up. "So, as I was saying, A few of the ladies in the building get together for an evening from time to time. It's a gas. Sometimes we have a planned activity, sometimes we just gab. Anything goes, really. I'll let you know when the next one is. She seemed genuinely interested in having me join in, and I actually felt a bit of grade school glee at being included. I turned to John, who I guess was probably starting to feel a bit excluded, and it was as though Megan sensed the same thing. Until then, the two of you should come over some evening. Do you play cards? I told her that we did, and I asked her if she played pitch. The look on her face made it clear she did not, so I chuckled and told her not to worry. We could play anything, and I'd love to get together some night soon. And I meant it. What was happening to me? She smiled back at the two of us and made her way towards the door. Perfect. Well, I must crack on. I was just bringing my trash downstairs and should let you get back to your day. John opened the door, and we all stepped out into the hallway where there was more room for the three of us. She bent down to pick up the bag that she had been carrying when we first met in the hall and turned to say goodbye. I extended my hand, told her it was lovely to meet her, repeated that I was looking forward to getting together for cards, and I was even more eager to meet Alabaster. I mean, if someone calls their cat their soul kitty, the standards have been set pretty high. She jostled her bag to her other hand in order to meet my handshake and beamed. Lovely to meet you as well, Jenny. We'll definitely get together soon. John, of course it was nice to see you too. And with that, she headed off in the direction of the lobby elevator. Before turning back towards our doorway, I noticed what looked like a playing card on the ground. I bent down and picked it up, realizing it must have fallen from her bag at some point. As I did, John noted, "That was nice of her to stop by." I agreed, and then asked if he had mentioned to her that I was moving in today. "No, I haven't seen Megan for a few weeks, actually. And come to think of it, I don't think I mentioned to anyone in the building that you were moving in." He put his arm around my shoulder and reassured me. "But don't worry, you'll meet them soon enough, I'm sure. Wasn't it funny that she called you Jenny, though? No one calls you that but your Gram." While John spoke, I had been completely entranced by the card in my hand, and I gently turned it over several times to investigate it more closely. It wasn't a typical playing card at all. It was a tarot card. The back was an intricate pattern of rich jewel colors and gold, circles and scrolls and orbs. A rich burgundy border surrounded the edges, and the front side had an illustration of a night scene with two foreboding pillars on either side. A dog and a wolf stared up at a moon, which in turn was frowning down at them. Still entirely distracted by the card, I responded absentmindedly, "Hmm? Oh, yeah. It was funny that she called me Jenny. I never even told her my name." And that was our very first episode of Haunted Happenstance. Thank you so much for joining me. As you may have gathered, I'm Jennifer, and I'll be leading you through our spooky little tales here at the Loft. Be sure to join me on social media as well. We're Haunted Happenstance on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And until we chat again, keep your eyes open. Those creepy coincidences might be just a bit more.